afternoon in the video store. The clock rang out for lunch. The owner, Dave, craved Taco Bell and a cheesy gordita crunch. Meanwhile, load of the waste of Morton Hoof sat alone in his room. And Morton Hoof had Bell to sell, but he craved the power of cartoons. Dave and Hoof agreed to sell Bells for tunes and tunes for Bell. Saturday morning apocalypse. Saturday morning apocalypse.
This Christmas, for the first time, America's most exciting and legendary motion picture hero comes to the screen like you've never seen him before.
The Bat!
In an all-new, larger-than-life feature film. Now, the Dark Knight confronts his newest and most menacing villain.
Your angel of death awaits.
The Phantasm.
I want you.
And faces his greatest danger.
Be too careful with all those weirdos around.
The soaring new adventure. Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. The animated movie. Coming for a Christmas you'll never forget.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting adventure of Saturday Morning Apocalypse, theatrical edition. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by fellow Cape Crusaders, Ryan.
I'm Ryan.
Mike.
Hello, Dave.
And our Lord and Morton, Nick.
Your angel of death has arrived.
You always were a loser, Mr. Hoof.
That is my favorite Careful line there, in the Dave. Movie.
You always were a loser, Mr. Bronski.
Mask of the Phantasm. So the reason we chose this one was kind of an impromptu choice for Saturday Morning Apocalypse. Like, it was not on the docket, but there's been sort of a hubbub recently through the dimensional rifts of a new Batman movie in another timeline, starring, of all people, Robert Pattinson as Batman, which is very interesting. I want to see how that works. Unfortunately, you know, stuff comes through slowly through the time rifts. So
we've all watched it, Dave. You haven't watched it?
I haven't seen it.
What?
Well, don't spoil it for me. Like, hopefully, I'm hoping it'll show up on our timeline's version of HBO in another month or so, and I can watch it. But that was kind of the impetus of doing this episode. We wanted to discuss some Batman, and what better Batman to discuss than arguably one of the, I think this is like among Bat fans. Certainly among us, this is usually regarded as one of the better Batman film adaptations, and I think that's well deserved. I mean, this was originally intended as a direct to video feature for Batman the Animated Series, and at times I think it kind of shows that, not in a bad way, but I'm like, yeah, I could see this being like a direct to video. And then later getting changed to theatrical. But nonetheless, I think the same quality that we saw with Batman the Animated Series is still present here. The writing, the animation style. And I think that's a safe thing to say, that this is one of the better adaptations of Batman on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, like, the way the direct to video on this shows is mostly just the runtime. Like, they,
yeah,
I think they were smart in maybe adjusting to make it, because it's only what, an hour and 10, an hour 15
with credits. It's like an hour 16, I think.
Oh, we have talked about those credits. we were saying before we started recording, that is roughly one third the length of the newer The Batman.
I'm told it's a long movie.
But so it sounds like they were maybe going for like quality over quantity. Cause I don't, like, I can't think off the top of my head of like scenes that seemed low budget. Like, it's
I'm gonna be the contrary. I disagree. I think you know, I know everyone about it. I think it does look cheap to me a little bit. I think the I think the compositions are beautiful. I think it looks not much different than the TV show. I think
I think I have an answer to that. Again, this was meant for a direct to video distribution. It also wasn't framed for theatrical exhibition 178 originally. Like this was actually animated and done in 4:3. And later the decision was made during the production from the studio, like, hey, let's make this a feature. Like, you guys are doing really good. That first season was like,
and they had
really
like
well
8 months
received.
To do it or something.
They only had 8 months from beginning to end, which when you figure for animation, insane. Yeah. That is insane. But I get what you mean, Ryan, by this still looking like the show, because you got to figure this was framed for 4:3. So what they're doing in order to get it at a theatrical exhibition is zooming in on a 4:3 image, so you're basically losing a little bit of resolution. And that was the thing that was running through my mind watching this. We were watching an HD transfer of this movie, but the whole time I'm thinking, like, this doesn't look that great.
Well, I know. I think it looks amazing. I think it's beautiful. It also, but like, especially the stills wise, and there's some really interesting ideas and like compositions and ways transition. Kind of like what we talked about a lot with the animated series when we did those few episodes. I just think, like, character animation wise, like, it looks like frame wise, it's about the same as the show. I think I think if they actually plan to do this theatrically, it'd look a lot different. And this is, and it's funny because we're continuing almost our discussion from what was the Warner? I can't remember what we just did for Warner Brothers Animation. That was
Looney Tunes back in action.
Looney Tunes back in action.
We're going back to the source.
We're going back. This
is
the first one of the Warner Brothers Animation feature department, and this is just the start of like their run of just crap that didn't. I mean, they had good stuff in that time, but just didn't know how to do like how this works. Like through the time rift, I somehow watched the new Pixar Turning Red, and there's a making of also on there too, and they started doing this in like 2018 or 17. Like, there's like video of them like starting this project and stuff, and then like how long it took and going, and it's
8 months is insane. I don't
like
know how
yeah
they did this well, 8 months.
It's more of like a 8 years thing, you know.
Yeah.
To do this,
I think.
Are you gonna say something, Nick?
Well, I think I was less critical about the animation because
me too.
Because the overall product does tap in almost perfectly into the feeling that I got from the 90s animation show. Like, I mean, shouldn't be a surprise. But I think that where this movie is very ambitious, I would argue, in a sense, based on the story it's telling about Bruce Wayne. And I think that the animation, I mean, I guess I could definitely see where you're coming from. But I don't know, I feel, and there's two, I would say there's two parts to why I don't necessarily, I'm not as critical of that. One is because I would say the target audience was for us when we were in that age and we were seeing this in the theaters. And so we're not really paying attention to that. And two, now that we're watching it with a more critical eye or whatever, I'm almost like, now I'm more concerned with the story itself. And I think that the animation, I don't know. I'm just more forgiving. I guess, at this point.
I'm not even taking it as a negative. I'm almost like it's like a. I wish like it was a like I in another a perfect world. Like I almost like wish they gave him the chance to even make it even better. You know.
I would definitely agree. I think that
I guess I'm comparing it to like Disney movies at the time and stuff like that.
Well, I think that like it could be more fluid. Just the character animation, but I think the thought that went into the composition of all the shots and the backgrounds, like the art direction is just so strong. And I think the backgrounds, like the way this style is, almost lends itself to minimalism. Like you're kind
That's
of
true.
Like dealing with like that old like silent film era of like the surreal, like Cabinet of Caligari and stuff, which it doesn't have a whole lot going on anyway. So I think it,
It's kind of funny.
I get what you're saying, but I think, I don't know if it loses that much. Like
you kind of remind me of something too, though. Sorry, go ahead, David. You want
to? Well, I was going to say, to be clear, and I think Ryan, you're probably the same way. This isn't like necessarily a detriment to the movie.
No,
it's just sort of like a thing realizing as I'm watching this, because I'm going in watching what I think is an HD transfer, and not that it looks bad, but I think it's just a reminder to me that it's just like, that's right, this was originally intended to be a direct-to-video thing. It didn't necessarily go in with the high aspirations of a theatrical release. So it's not a detriment at all to the compositions or anything like that. Like, that's all good. And it's not a knock against the movie, even. I think it was more just an observation, like... I could really tell the loss of resolution by zooming in on a 4x3 image was kind of present in this, whereas that wouldn't be the case with the animated series because it retains the 4x3 aspect ratio. That was the only thing. Like, you're right, the compositions of this totally hold up. And
you know,
it's
a fun way to look at it, I think, maybe, like, because this movie is like the length and the basically the story, like. Like, Batman's always been noir, but, like, this is, like, very noir story. Mm-hmm. And also, they are, like, an 80-minute long thing, usually, or something, 75 minutes. And those movies were low-budget, like, B-movies, you know? Like, they were kind of not the... But they also have lots of crazy compositions, and people try it out shit. So it's kind of like, this is, like, the equivalent of that in a weird way, where it's, like...
Definitely, and it feels like... I mean...
Not just definitely... story-wise, but also... Like, production-wise.
Yeah, like, everything about this movie feels like more than, like, a kid's movie. It feels to me like a throwback to, like, a 40s movie. Like, which is neat and probably, like, gels with... Probably an intentional choice to gel with the art style they have. I mean, everything about this... I mean, it's definitely not exactly 1940s. Like, there's a car phone and stuff, but it...
It's always been a weird futuristic kind of...
Yeah,
like, when does this 40s. Take place? It just takes place somewhere.
There's still police blimps flying around.
Yeah.
Which I love, by the way.
I love the look. Yeah, I mean, the look of Gotham in this is like... the look. So much of this, I feel like, is, to me, how these characters are supposed to look. This is the Joker. Like, this is the Batman. This is Gotham. For me, that's sort of like... I think, like, the definitive versions of a lot of this stuff.
As we were watching this, I was thinking about you a lot, Mike. You say oftentimes when we're watching a movie or talking about a movie, like, you'll refer to the movie as being cozy. This to me is like cozy Batman, like 40s gangster, like 40s gangsters, like those 40s looking cars and stuff like that. Like, that aesthetic for Batman to me is just like, it's like wrap myself up in a warm, cozy blanket. Like, I just love that. I love the fact, I love the names of the gangsters in this movie, like Chucky Saul, Buzz Barnes or whatever.
I love that Salvatore Maroni. The gangsters in this, they say, like, It is literally the mob.
Yeah.
Like,
they're
not like some like unnamed criminal organization. Like, no, it's the mob specifically.
And they're going to shoot you.
Yeah. They're going to smoke cigars. They're going to flick the cigarettes at Batman. They're going to shoot Batman. They're going to drink.
Launder money through a casino.
This has been a long time coming, fellas. 3 years on the plates alone. I think you'll find the product was worth the wait. Go ahead. Take a good look, boys.
Jeez, Mr. Saul, I can't tell the difference.
You'd need one of them neutron microscopes, Palmer. It's identical, down at Ben Franklin's stubble. I want it launder through the casino at a half mil a week. 3/4 mil by March. Anybody got a problem with that?
It's a very... it's a pretty basic story, but it's also kind of, like, complex for this... I think this is why... I the movie didn't really do too well when it came out, kind of thing. But, like,
well,
it's
like
very
Citizen
complex.
Kane for Batman.
Yeah, I know. It's like pretty wild. Yeah.
Well, the movie I thought of most, actually, when I was watching this time, was On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is my favorite Bond movie. And it's particularly with the relationship between Bruce Wayne and what's
Andrea,
her name?
Andrea Beaumont.
Andrea.
Their relationship, I don't know, it just took on that more, I don't know, like a kind of a dissolution of the facade of Batman and the way that they kind of dissolve James Bond's facade, I would argue, in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and just going to the heart of the man And that's just so, and I could, what Mike just said about like why maybe kids didn't get into it at the time or whatever. I could see why, because that's, Oh, well, it sounded
I just didn't really do box. I mean, but it, on VHS, it was like a big hit, and that's why they never really kept doing these in theaters.
Well, I can just, my ultimate point was that I can see why maybe kids, I mean, I loved this when I was a kid, but I could see, looking back, why maybe it wasn't as favorite as some other storylines that we saw in the animated series or something like that. But yeah, I think there's a very there's a prestige about this movie incorporated with the way that they handle Bruce Wayne's character in this one.
I think Andrea Beaumont is such a cool character too, because it's kind of like the On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where you're using that relationship to get into the character of Bruce Wayne. But you're, besides the love interest, the spoilers, the fact that she is the Phantasm, and that basically the idea is, you know, Bat, it's sort of like the other side of the coin of Batman, where like Batman's, and that's a theme they've explored in sorry, Dave, we all saw the Batman. And the Batman, kind of something they touch
don't
on
do
is
this
like,
to me.
Hey, Batman doesn't kill people, and like that's a big thing. Like I'm not there to like just murder people, and you don't want to kind of go over that razor's edge. Well, the Phantasm is sort of a character who is dealing with the death of her parents and becoming a crazy superhero, but is going to be like, no, I'm going to kill people, and I'm doing this for vengeance.
She's going to do creep show style kills on these mob bosses.
I was thinking the same thing on the grave.
You always were a loser, Mr. Bronski. Farewell, Mr. Bronski.
But yeah, and like so you get to see it shows like how the other side of that, like which is interesting and something I don't think we've ever seen before, and I think does really get to the heart of like the character.
You mentioned, like, I think this was you, Mike, you mentioned that like while technically the animation style doesn't really, the animation style still retains that TV look and feel. Like, I feel like the story being told here is a more grown up one and a more movie-ish one, if you want to call it that. And reading in the ChadDB, supposedly this was intended to be the end of the animated series, like story-wise. Like, this was the way that she kind of, the way that at the end of the movie, when Andrea sort of disappears with the smoke and she's holding Joker and he's just sort of laughing, like that was supposed to sort of intimate like this is kind of the end. Like, who knows what happens with the Joker after this? and I think the tone of this movie fits. I feel like the tone of this story fits a movie. And like you said, like, yeah, it's more akin to something like Citizen Kane. And just like, these are like the things that I feel like they touched upon in the show. And we talked about it when we talked about those handful of episodes a year or so ago. That they would just sort of like pick at things, but they maybe wouldn't necessarily delve deeper because they were kind of bound by a 20-minute runtime. I feel like this movie is sort of the animated series like fully expanded upon as far as like delving into character backstories and emotions and
it handles that backstory so well too.
Yeah,
like one of my favorite things about the movie is how you really see the like death of his parents looming large over his life, but they never show it. You never see his parents. You never see like the death. You just see the grave. And like,
you hear that, Zack Snyder? You don't need to show the damn scene for the millionth time. We get it. They were killed outside
the way they shoot the grave, and the way that like the Wayne grave is just this like ominous presence, like looming large, literally.
A lot of lightning and thunder going on at Gotham at all times.
Yeah. I love it. I love, like, it's so gothic and you know, dramatic, and you know, It's I don't know. It's not subtle, but it's effective, I think, especially for a comic book kind of story.
One of my favorite lines in the movie is when Batman goes to talk. He knows that Andrea is the Phantasm, and he's going to talk. Or no, he doesn't know he's the Phantasm. It's a moment where it's after Batman knows that Andrea knows that he's Batman, and he's talking to her. He's like, "I know your dad was into some crooked shit and all that." And there's a great line, one of my favorite lines in the movie, when Andrea's just like,
"The way I see it, the only one in this room controlled by his parents is you."
Oh, that whole scene is so good. Because that line is amazing. And then Batman flies out. Then as soon as Batman leaves, Andrea drops her drink and the glass shatters and she falls on the bed. Cause she's they're both just trying to hold it together and stuff. And inside they're so broken inside. I love it.
I love watching these tortured souls. But one other thing I think this movie does well, in addition to just really deep emotional beats with the characters, I think the few action set pieces in this are really well done. Mm-hmm. Especially Batman's first kind of, you know, fight when he's not a Batman yet. He just wears this leather jacket and a ski mask, and it's one of those things where I'm just like, damn, this could easily equally work in a live action movie and be a huge big thing. Just that whole sequence where he jumps on the back of that truck and he's flying around and the truck, you know, crashes into this cop car. Cop car turns over and is sliding through. I feel like this is something out of a Lethal Weapon movie as far as the action choreography, the shit going on.
One of the things we were again about the Batman that I think we've talked about is it's kind of neat that the way Robert Pattinson plays Batman, and he feels he kind of goes between feeling he's just so psychotic he doesn't care if he dies, but then sometimes you do see fear in his eyes. And there's a scene specifically where he's jumping off of a building. And Ryan, I think you were saying you like the moment where he kind of takes a beat.
This is a beat, a breath that kind of I feel tells a lot.
Before he jumps off.
Just that one thing was a big
thing. And I think you get a little bit of that vibe in this scene too, where he's kind of putting on the mask and he's looking. He's all right, Bruce, let's do it. And he jumps in.
Gets to psych himself up a bit.
One of the things that he's not figured out yet, besides the costume, is just the whole idea of scaring people. And so when he shows up, he is still Bruce Wayne, all right guys, surrender your weapons, and they're all
that's right, he doesn't what? Use the voice in this scene.
And
lay on your stomachs, arms spread.
What?
Screw you.
Okay, Scaz, we're done shopping.
All clear here.
Well, Bruce, here goes.
Let's blow this pop stain.
On your stomachs, arms spread.
Who's this clown?
You heard me.
Yeah, you heard him, boys. You heard Mr. Kung Fu.
Yeah, I'm shaking.
Say your prayers, sucker.
Well, you're talking about they feel like the Lethal Weapon thing. I think this movie definitely does wear a lot of its influences, especially the action scenes, on its sleeve, because it's one of the first Phantasm scenes is very Terminator 2, with the T-1000 on the car, breaking windshields and stuff like that. In a parking garage. It's very much they probably even had the scene and animated to it,
I remember. I remember seeing that opening scene with the Phantasm killing Chucky Saul. When Chucky Saul drives off the roof and
Furious 7.
You see the car a profile shot of the car between the two buildings and flying between the two and crashing into the building on the opposite side. I remember thinking oh my god, I didn't think they could do that in a movie. Just the idea of a car jumping from one building to the other and landing inside one of the windows was something I wouldn't see realized in a live action movie until Fast and Furious. Furious 7.
Oh yeah, that too. They knew.
Vin Diesel's like, I watch a lot of cartoons, and you guys ever seen this Fantastic Four?
Except they actually they went through like three buildings on that.
Right? Yeah, they upped it. Well, it was a movie. They had to up it.
Yeah, that's the kind of budget you get when you know from the beginning it's going to be theatrical.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. Forgot about
but right, I feel like, again, like there's cool stuff. There's cool action scenes in the show, but what, the action scenes in this one, again, it might not have been necessarily intended to be released theatrically originally, but like I feel like the stakes in the action in this movie.
Yeah, there and the writing too. The writing, I think, is theatrical.
There's an action sequence. So, kind of the arc of the movie is the Phantasm is going around killing these mob bosses and. The cops.
It's getting blamed on Batman.
The cops think it because the Phantasm kind of looks like Batman, so they're like, "Oh, it's Batman."
It's the stinking bat.
And so the cops eventually all turn on Batman, and they're trying to get him too. And there's a scene where Batman is like the Phantasm has just appeared. There's like I don't know some murder, and Batman is there, and there's a chase sequence with the cops and Batman. And that sequence is, I was thinking of you, Nick, that like it gets gnarly, like, and there's like real tension to that. And eventually Batman is cornered in a, like a construction site. And I was like loving this scene. Like it felt like he's not going to get out. Like,
yeah,
you feel the stakes.
Yeah, like he gets bloody, and you know, there's like shots of like his first person where his like vision is blurred, and he's like seeing blood, and you know, he's like surrounded by cops, just like shooting machine guns at him, and there's like explosions going off, and every once in a while, it's all dark, of course, and stormy, and like the helicopter lights are blasting on him, and he's like a cornered rat, like, it just felt so. Like weighted and grounded and gnarly in a way I thought was like kind of different than the show, like the animated series. Like it felt a little more intense than I was expecting to see in this.
And, there's a moment when in this sequence when he's running around and jumping off things and like it's really shown how like you said, a rat like caught in a corner, like because he's not graceful here. Like they're on him so much that like usually when ordinarily he'd like jump from like a rope or something, like he'd just land like a cat.
He starts out that way, but he just gets so beaten.
Well, there's
down
so
the
many people and there are so many people shooting at him. There's a moment when he like jumps and he literally just like lands on his shoulder, like bah! Like on the ground. I'm like, oh yeah. God, like I felt that.
Yeah, the chase sequence is so good because like Mike just said, there's like. Layers of his ability deteriorating. So he starts out graceful with his full-on Batman.
He starts out in the bat. He's like in the plane. Like whereas when he shows up, he's like full-on. I'm in the bat suit and I'm in my bat plane. And the first thing the cops do is like detain the bat plane.
Yeah,
I sometimes wish this was a video podcast because like the motion that Mike just did as he's like, I'm in my bat plane, do it like a little like on a steering wheel. I wish the audience could see that. It looks so cute.
But I think it's cool because there are like, so Batman starts out as Batman, all his capabilities, full on supernatural in some senses. But then he starts to lose his ability. He starts to lose his costume, literally. he's just falling apart. And I think the way that they show this during the different levels of the chase sequence is just so cool. And I think it was because that there's a similar chase sequence in The Batman that I think is really cool. And it reminded me of like, I don't know, just that. I don't know, Batman being chased, and there was a real sense of desperation in the Mask of Phantasm scene that I think was, you're like, yeah, how is he going to get out of this? And
well, especially when he goes to the extreme of taking off his cowl and his cape and using it as a distraction to, like, you know, lead the cops away while he runs away. Like, seeing Batman bloodied without his mask and you just see, you know, just he's in his costume but he doesn't have his cowl or his cape. Like, it's basically him without his armor, essentially. Like,
yeah.
That cowl
Batman. It's kind of an interesting thing because it's like it's a cool distraction and it, like, kind of gets him out of the jam a little bit, but it ups the stakes a bit. Like,
if he's
more
he's
vulnerable.
Really
like, if he's even, like, if they shine a spotlight on him, his identity is, like, up. Like, it's totally over.
Can you talk a little bit? I mean, this is going to sound so blasphemy, probably, to this group, I'm guessing. But, like, my kind of experience a little bit with this movie growing up, and maybe I didn't really, like, watch it a ton, I feel like, compared to probably others. And there's a reason, that, and it's still kind of something that sticks with me a little bit with it. Well, I think this movie's amazing. I, for some reason, and I think it's metal as hell, I'm not nuts about the Phantasm character design. Am I nuts for thinking
what?
That?
I like it. Yeah.
I think the mask is amazing, and I think it's that damn little claw, like, weird, like, thing looks... looks goofy to me. I don't know.
It's red. It's a claw hand.
No, but it's like, I think it's a stub. It's like this weird, like, metal, like, circle. I think it's just the way it's, like, I think the idea is all there. And I think it just, there's something goofy. And I think.
I wore this clamshell tape raw.
Yeah.
Like, this was,
see, I didn't own it.
I loved this as a kid. And I think it's rad. One of my favorite things about it is, like, the fog, like, just that,
yeah.
Like, there's this constant, I was thinking now, like, is is she just, like, vaping hardcore in there, like, constantly?
They never explain her powers. Like Batman investigates it throughout the movie. He says, like, some science mumbo jumbo, like, macro molecular fiber. There's all this stuff.
Yeah, they never, yeah, it's whatever. It's magic.
And, like,
juice.
The movie, as the movie goes on, like, in the first chunk of the movie, like, Phantasm seems like, you know, paranormal almost with the abilities, you know, like, there's a moment when she's getting shot at and she does, like, the thing, and it almost seems like, all right, are the guns, like, phasing through her? Like, are the bullets phasing through her? Like, what's going on? And I guess really it's just her doing essentially, like, a ninja vanish move each time and running away. I guess that's all it is.
Yeah, I just imagine in my headcanon, it's a combination of her being really fast, because we know she's, like, a good martial artist.
And she knows jiu-jitsu.
And the smoke. Like, the moving fast and all the smoke, it makes it easy to, like, get out of the way. But no, Ryan, so you think that you don't like the claw. That's the,
I think the mask and the hood's sweet. For some reason, I think what turned me off even, like, this was something as even a kid, and I was just like, I think it looks goofy. And I think it's, like, the ripped, and I get, like, supposed to be, like, this song, like, Harbinger of Death and all this stuff, and that's cool. But I don't know, for some reason, like, to me, and I think it's just the way it looks, like, lit up, is just, like, the ripped cape and stuff like that. I don't know why. Usually something like this wouldn't bug me. This isn't like,
I
stuff,
love it.
This
I
isn't
love
stuff
it.
That does, but for some reason, this was just, like, a character design thing where I'm like, that looks cheesy. Like, Batman just punched that fucking thing. It's like, it just, I'm like, that thing just looks bad.
This,
like,
is
dumb.
Blasphemy,
that is
Ryan.
A dumb-looking cape. Just punch it.
I disagree.
Yeah,
with
I know.
This
I agree. I totally I understand. Like, I'm just saying, this is a weird thing
me
for
of
me.
Is something from... another thing that has come through the portal lately, taken over my life, is Elden Ring. This reminded me of, like,
sure,
something you would fight or be in Elden Ring.
I think maybe that's part of it. Maybe there was this, like, this just feels, I mean, and that's, and I like the thematic element of all this. Like, it kind of feels out of time in a weird way of, like, this is actual old school Renaissance looking death kind of thing. But there's something about it as a kid kind of, and I think it, maybe it just needs more darkness and shadow, and it would look rad. I don't know. There's something about it with, like, the gray and the black. On, I don't know. There's something weird.
I'll try to go to bat for Ryan a little bit.
The Phantasm is very brightly lit in several sequences.
No, and I think it's cool. I think, like, I'm talking about, like, thematically and all that stuff. There's something about it that's always turning.
Imagining
me,
like, the Phantasm, like, sipping some tea in, like, a sunny day by the pool.
Well, I'm trying to think of every other Batman or Batman villain in his, you know, gallery of rogues, and Mask of the Phantasm does, I would say, does stand out as, like, an anachronism. Like, he does seem out of place.
Yeah.
Because if you take, you have monsters like Clayface or the human bat thing, or you have demented converted mobsters like the Penguin or the Joker, but the Phantasm is, like, demonic, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's probably turned me off too. Like, it scared
and
me. Probably
it just doesn't. It doesn't seem like it belongs. If you line them up and say which one, you know, is not like the others, that's as far as I'll go. I mean, I can see why.
Counterpoint to that. Nick.
Oh, okay.
This is not you're right. This isn't part of the Rogues Gallery. This is what Batman could have been. Like, this is not a villain. This is the dark side of Bruce Wayne. I don't think the Phantasm is necessarily a villain.
Yeah, Phantasm doesn't have any beef with Batman. Like, in fact, she only fights
Batman.
Yeah, so
take that, Ryan.
No, I agree with all of this. I think this is great. No, I agree, something about it. Yeah.
I agree
and
with
that
you.
Like, that idea is so cool. That was definitely lost on me as a kid, but especially coming into this after seeing the Batman, when they're harping so hard on that idea of, like, don't get lost in the vengeance or whatever, but and having a character to be like, well, this is what it could have been. Like, this is the dark side of it. There's even a great, like, one of my favorite parts of this movie is that I think it's like at the end, like where Alfred's talking to Batman and he's like,
I don't think she wanted to be saved, sir. Vengeance blackens the soul, Bruce. I always feared you would become that which you fought against. You walk the edge of that abyss every night, but you haven't fallen in, and I thank heaven for that.
Yeah, cool.
It's basically Alfred saying, Bruce, you're one bad night away from wielding a goofy looking stub knife.
Well, I just want to
clarify. It's not goofy. It looks really cool.
I agree with everything Mike said, and the only difference is I think that you could canonically you could consider the Phantasm as a part of that group, but I totally see what he's saying. I agree with you, and I think that is very, very cool.
It is cool. No, I think I agree with everything you're saying about it, because I'm like, oh, that's great takes and everything, and I think that makes sense too. And it might have just been something as a kid that kind of, like, when I saw that, I was like, I don't know, there's something off about this, and maybe I just wasn't putting it together. I'm like, oh, okay, this is like what they're trying to accomplish with this. You know, I wasn't looking at it on a deep level like that. But
we all get our hangups on certain things. For Dave, it's bread. For you, it's
right on the table.
It's
that damn stubby hook. If that hook just like looked more like a spike, maybe that's what it needed to be, like a spike coming out. You know,
there's that would look dumb.
I swear, there's like it needs like a note. That to me, I don't know what it is.
A note?
It needs a note. Like maybe just a spike instead of like a stub. I don't know.
I don't know, right? I feel like you would be the guys that you always complain about, where it's just like, this is animation. We can't just change that. And then they change it, and then Ryan,
like at
the
end
next
of the
day,
eight
like,
month.
Can you? You gave us
I'm
eight
like,
months.
What I hate. I know. I'm very. I know. This is terrible.
This is Ryan going.
What do you think about
edge of fans?
Yeah.
don't fall into the abyss, Ryan. What do you think about the Joker in this movie?
Never better. Just always the best.
This might be possibly
so
my favorite showing of the Joker in the animated series, you know, lexicon, whatever, because like in the show, he kind of goes back and forth between being menacing and goofy in the show. Whereas here, I mean, obviously he's goofy, but I feel like they really amp up his menace factor in this movie to a point where it's creepy. Like when we first see him, his whole introduction.
Talk a little bit about the introduction, because we've not really like said anything about, I feel like, the what this movie is kind of about.
Well,
like
it's basically basically kind of it's looking at Bruce's origins becoming Batman. While at the same time, there is this, basically in the main plot of the movie,
it's freaking non-linear.
There is a character called the Phantasm who's knocking off these crime bosses, and Batman's trying to figure it out. And it's all tied back into this guy who worked for the mobsters, essentially. And Bruce is trying to figure out, like, is this guy back? Like, is he trying? And it's Andrea's father. Like, is he back? Is he killing off these mobsters? Is he getting revenge? What's going on? He's trying to figure out who this guy is. And as the mobsters keep getting picked off one by one of them, the main guy, Salvatore Molestra, gets increasingly desperate. The Batman's on us. He's trying to kill us. Like, I only got one more option to do. I got to go to the Joker. He can help us. His crazy can match Batman's crazy, essentially.
Stop killing the children! that song.
Gasp! Can it be old Sally the Weezer Valestra? Welcome, Paizon. It's been a dog's age.
Hello, Joker. Didn't mean to drop by unannounced.
Oh, Salvatore. Why so formal? Mi casa nostra es su casa nostra. So, what's an old-timer like you want with a two-timer like me?
Business. I got...
Ooh, business sounds like fun. Come, we'll repair the more comfortable environment. Now hold on to your hat and watch those valuables. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
And I love this introduction of the Joker and like where he is. Because one of the flashbacks we see is Bruce and Andrea going to the World's Fair, which is, again, you know, like great symbolism, right? Like it's like, oh, the future is going to be so bright and shiny and beautiful. And here's all the cool stuff. And in the present, we see the Joker is now hiding out at the decrepit World's Fair. I love that Gotham has just abandoned the World's Fair, like the exhibit. They didn't tear it down or anything. They've just let it to rot.
This is really apropos of the animated series. Like, it's insane how many abandoned mega structures the Joker or just villains in general can find to hide out in. These creepy abandoned places.
Yeah, there's a lot of grift in the public works projects of Gotham City.
But the introduction of this is so scary. You got this wheezing old mobster like who has to carry around this oxygen tank. He's like, if there was only some other way. And he's rocking up. It looks like this like
very
it looks
Hector
like something
Salamanca
out of a Stephen King story or something. This decrepit World's Fair, and you see the Joker come in, and again to talk to the like even just so I said he's menacing, he's also just creepy. Like when he brings Sal into like the world of the future house, there's that creepy like animated doll wife character
robot,
and there's a moment where
everything creepy. With the doll so it's a robot, it's just like a model, like the
it's like a mannequin essentially,
World of Tomorrow, and so there's like our animatronic,
the kitchen of the future watches your wife
like chopping,
cuts
constantly chopping, yeah. And yeah, so he's just like, she's just still there chopping, and he's like,
what? Meatloaf again? Oh, I had it for lunch. Isn't Hazel here a cutie? True, she's a real homebody, but you can't help who you fall in love with. Ooh.
You can't help who you fall in love with. There's a moment, again, it leans into the dementedness of Joker when he's like, he like rubs up on this animatronic wife character, and he like grabs her cheek and tears off a little piece of it. He's like, ooh. And instead of like just throwing it over his shoulder, he like puts it in like his jacket pocket to save for some reason. Like that was great. Messed up.
It's great. There's lots of details like that throughout the movie that like, that's really
this,
awesome.
This movie has my all time favorite Joker moment. And it's later on this. So we have this scene with the mob boss, but there's a second scene, in the decrepit World of Tomorrow. It's kind of like the grand finale of the movie. And it starts with the Phantasm unmasked and the Joker fighting. And there's a moment where the Joker is like pushed up against this table, and behind him is a knife,
yes,
and the big stick of bologna. And he like hesitates for a second and grabs the stick of bologna instead of the knife and whacks her in the face. It's so good.
Disarms her. It's not
and
even
it's like
a joke.
It's like,
I mean,
you
it's
blink
a joke,
and you
but
miss
he
it.
Actually disarms her by doing this.
Yeah. It's so good that he's like sacrificing the most effective option for like, well, it would be pretty silly if I hit her with a stick of bologna.
Well, like, and it kind of like, I think this is another thing talking about like the upped menace factor of the Joker. Like one thing I thought the animated series did very well was the concept of Joker's laughing gas and how it like, in real life, that would be terrifying because, yeah, like, I don't know if you, I mean, I'm sure you guys have gotten to a point where you've laughed so hard it hurt, where you're just like you reach past a point where you're like, oh my God, my sides are hurting, and you're like thinking as you're laughing, like, I need to stop. This is really hurting now. I can't imagine going past even that point.
We all saw When Harry Met Sally.
But seriously, like that scene when he uses the laughing gas on I forget the guy's name.
The city councilman.
The city councilman, and you see him like in the hospital room, like laughing. And again,
he's like crying.
He's like, I'm trying, for God's sake. And it's just like, again, that's not necessarily like an intense line for anything else. But if you think, I don't know, just hearing a character say, I'm trying, for God's sake, in like in a kid's cartoon, that's intense.
Good heavens. Councilman, please, you've got to control yourself.
I'm trying, for God's sake.
Here's a relaxing order, Doctor.
I need some help. I'm still. Councilman, please. That's it. That's right. There, that should relax you enough for the toxin to run its course. Now try to stay calm.
Oh, man. That sequence is so good.
Done so well because, like, even, and I think this, and speaking of menace, it plays into, like, I think the terrifying nature of Batman, that even though this guy is laughing, he's been doused with the Joker gas, he can't stop laughing, there is a moment where he does stop laughing when Batman's like, tell me, you know, he does like his Batman interrogation thing, and it's scary enough that it breaks through the Joker's laughing gas and the guy stops laughing. He's like, you know, I just think they do a good job of, as we said, like, this may have been originally intended for a TV movie, but I think that the strength of the story and the performances elevate it to movie level. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, totally.
Well, and at a certain point, I mean, I don't want to like oversell the fact that it was a TV movie. Like, it wasn't that it was done and they're like, okay, actually, this is good enough. Yeah. Let's put it out. Like, they made that decision midway through. So there is some, like, you wouldn't have gotten Abe Vigoda for the show.
You know? Yeah, maybe. Like, they kind of had, you know.
They had good voice actors for the show. I think they could have gotten Abe Vigoda for the show.
Yeah, maybe that's not the best example. But I think
the music's amazing, too, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
The music. We haven't talked about the music yet. Like,
this is, like, the best Batman. I mean, Tim Burton's theme is kind of cool. But, like, and Prince
kinda
is great.
Cool.
But, like.
It's
really
good.
Movie, Tim Burton's theme.
Yeah. No. Okay. I don't mean.
You mean?
I guess the thing. The
you're
thing
talking about
Tim
Danny
Burton's,
Elfman.
Danny Elfman. Yeah, well, the thing about his theme is iconic. One of the best all time themes ever. But like, there's nothing else in that movie where the score in the Tim Burton Batman movie that sticks out music wise besides the theme.
I mean, there's nothing about it that sticks out music-wise other than it's, like, a fantastic score and one of the best comic book hero scores.
I mean, I think the theme is amazing, but, like, the theme is one.
That's like, one of that my favorite movie scores of all time, bar none. The Batman. Well, I should clarify, Batman 89. I haven't seen the Batman. I can't speak to the score for that movie, but.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good?
I think the score into this is like, it's so good. I mean, it's pretty like, you should, with the magic of editing, maybe we can get in here. There's a moment at the finale where the explosions are going off at the World's Fair. The score is like literally like opera, like operatic. And the Joker is just like laughing and like everything going on there. Just the explosions, the Joker laughing and the operatic score is like, it's a lot. It's like not subtle, but I love it.
That's one thing I think this one, it's the same composer that for the animated series, Shirley Walker, and I think that is one thing she added to the movie, Mask of the Phantasm, the operatic choir that comes up so often throughout the movie. I feel like it's an added layer of how should I put this, of importance that's kind of added to the movie. Like, we got an opera for this movie. We got a choir, you know. And speaking of which, we haven't discussed, while we're talking about the opera choir and all that, let's discuss the opening titles of this movie. This 3D
Yeah, are they, is it CGI? Or is it, or is it like supposed to look like CG?
It's like, CG.
Okay. I wasn't sure if, like, maybe they were just, like 3D but 2D, like, it, like, you know.
The opening shot where it's like flying through the Gotham, that
it's
was
all
CG.
Red too.
Red?
Well, it has it, like, it's like bathed in like black and red, like.
Well, the sky always had like a red sky. I feel like, but, yeah, that was cool.
It's fascinating. I was looking in the notes. I guess that their original intention was they wanted to kind of, because obviously animation is expensive and it takes a long time. Like, their original intention was, let's make like a 3D sort of city environment that we can use to kind of quicken up the pace or the completion time of these shows, or rather reduce the time needed. We can just use these 3D, you know, models of the city for certain scenes or transitions or whatever. They intended for it to be used in the show.
Oh, really?
Thankfully, they never did, because it may take longer, but like we mentioned before, like the cityscapes of the animated series are one of the key defining factors of that show as to why it's so good.
And this, opinion. I mean, it's tough to say, but definitely in my top five list of things I like about this movie would just be the shots of the city and just looking at, like, you know, like Sal's Diner and stuff, you know, just like the walkway on the casino and just so many cool details. And it just looks so, so different, so unique, so rad. I love the look of this city.
I always kind of like took that opening title thing, the 3D animation, is kind of just a way for them to be like, this is a movie now, you know.
It feels we very got CG. Like, this is 93, and like, check it out.
I thought that was good. Yeah. I thought it was cool. I don't know.
No, it looks cool, but it even as a kid, it always seemed to me like a thing, like just sort of a show-offy moment. Like, look what we got. We got some.
Yeah,
CG.
This isn't in the show.
It's not in the movie. Like, once you're done with the credits, that's out of here. You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like, and not that I'm not harping against it necessarily. I just think it's interesting that it's there for the credits. It almost seems like a kind of like a, you know, throwing their dick around moment. Like, look how cool we are. Look at them. We got some extra money for this thing.
It is like, look at the money. Like, we spent money on this.
Yeah, look at the money.
Well, like, if they would have done that, you imagine if it was like the same thing, but to hand drawn animated, it would have been like a football length. Piece of like celluloid or whatever, or the like panning over that, like it would have been
like
impossible.
I get the reasoning for
it. Looks,
to do that.
I like it. Like it looks cool, and it's fun to just have, especially for the intro sequence. I almost don't mind that it looks a little different.
Yeah.
Than the actual. Well, because
you got
like
the score
a
going too. You got that score with the opera going. It's just like
it's like a mood setter. Yeah, totally.
And I think the first two Burton movies kind of always had an intro sort of like this, right? Like, there's like they kind of have that kind of long, you know, like going through the logo. What's the Returns intro like? I can't remember. Do you remember, Dave?
It starts off. It's a
cold up goo.
Yeah, it's a cold open. You get the cobble pots, and then they dump the baby in the river, and then the titles come as the baby basket or whatever is going through like the
it's only it's only the first one that has like the logo. That's cool.
And then you get to the Burton or the Schumacher movies where it's like, you know what I really liked? I like those old Superman movies where the titles like zoom at you. Like, let's do that. Only Batman.
Doesn't the Sam Raimi Spider-Man do some like weird?
It's like
through
this.
Stuff?
It's like dun, 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 same composer. Dun, 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 through like the webs and stuff like that.
It's kind of similar.
Is the Sam Raimi like Spider-Man 3D... Danny Elfman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You get like I remember in that first Spider-Man, it's like a 3D creation of the city, sort of similar to this, and you get like sort of like the webs are kind of spinning around and stuff. Like, I gotta say, like, that's a movie we might need to tackle at some point in the future. That first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie, I think that movie holds up.
I would be down.
It would be interesting because, for an extra reason, because in the time zone that you were talking about with the new Batman movie, there's a new Doctor Strange movie, and it's directed by Sam Raimi.
So, it's gonna be wild, damn! I just learned about. Hopefully they let him go wild, I hope.
And,
you know?
So I'm like extra excited, but to maybe see that.
Yeah, he hasn't done a movie in a while. It's been like over 10 years probably since the Oz Great and Powerful.
Oh.
Eesh. I remember, it's a brief tangent, I remember seeing that movie, Oz the Great and Powerful, with you and your mom, Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
We saw that together. And I think there was more than, I don't think we've ever discussed this on a show, but one of your catchphrases could be, Jesus, Denise.
Well, so she was saying something
good. Yeah, what's the trailer. Let's talk a little bit about Oz the Great and Powerful. So
I don't remember the movie really at all.
What do you all think of it?
I
just saw the ads and I was like, Jesus, it looks like from the school of the Star Wars prequels kind of.
I love Wizard of Oz is probably one of my favorite movies, and so I was, I need to see it. So.
Okay, I'd like to just quickly throw out that there is a movie I would love to talk about in the future called Return to Oz.
Oh, I've never seen it. I loved it, yeah.
I think that might be a movie like the characters in It, where I purposefully forgot it. You know what I mean? Because it was so terrifying and traumatizing. I had to forget it.
I'd love that, because I've always been curious. I remember.
Do you know if Denise liked The Oz, Great and Powerful?
She probably thought it was okay. Yeah.
Well,
she doesn't really like movies too often. We're at the podcast
where we're talking about other movies we should watch, and I think that's a telltale sign that maybe we should wrap it up. Do you guys have any other thoughts on Mask of the Phantasm?
It's a really great poster, I think. The really cool design.
But the poster features the Phantasm, Ryan. I thought you hated the Phantasm.
Not the nub hand.
Okay, just to show you what I'm talking about, let's just get it. Just so you know what I'm talking about. Look at this. Look at this stupid nub.
Ryan is showing us an image of the Phantasm.
Ryan, for listeners, Ryan is showing a really badass image of the Phantasm in his cool claw hand.
It's the Her claw's cool. Claw hand. It's that stupid nub that just drives. I don't know what it is. It's just some. I don't know.
Would it have been cooler if it was, like you said, if it was just a weapon that she held?
No, I think it's. I think it just has to
be like an arm.
Has to come to a point like this.
It kind of reminds me of something you would like harpoon a whale with or something.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what you're gonna do with that thing. I don't know.
What if it was something like
kill
more
mobsters?
What if it was something more akin to like those two knives that the Predator uses that come out of his little like?
There you go. There you go.
What if it was just Wolverine claws?
This is.
What if it was Wolverine?
Yeah, I don't know. There was a something about this that's always stuck in my craw. Is that the term? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It's a stupid. I know. I get it. It's a stupid thing to harp on, but something about it.
I was not expecting this to happen. I was not expecting the nub to be such a big source of contention.
This is Ryan's bread.
Look, that mask is red. I get it. That, like, you even talking about, I don't think I've even thought about it. Like, oh, it's another side of Batman. You have like almost like an evil side. And,
it would be interesting to see, for the sake of Ryan's, hang up, like different renditions of the Phantasm's claw.
Originally that thing wasn't going to be part of the Phantasm's getup.
Really?
That was,
how was
of
the
a
Phantasm
late
originally going to be?
I'm not sure, but evidently that whole nub knife hand was a kind of a late edition design thing for the.
So there was like a Ryan in the production of this movie who wasn't like no nub. They were like, actually, we should probably add a nub.
It's Ryan's Phantasm.
This is right. Oh my god.
I'm trying to. There's definitely some different versions that look pretty cool from like different comics. People put them in and put her in. Pretty rad.
It was, another.
It'd be cool if you had like a Mega Man cannon hand. That'd be cool.
One thing.
Yeah, they just changed
hands.
This
would not be the last time we would see the Phantasm. The Phantasm would show up later in the Justice League cartoon, the finale of that show called Epilogue, where they basically just give like a summation of what happened to Batman after Batman Beyond. It's kind of funny. It doesn't really have anything to do with Justice League. It's almost
is it Andrea Beaumont still?
Yeah, it's Andrea Beaumont. It's basically telling the origin of Batman Beyond, how that whole thing happened. And there's a moment where Amanda Waller, I think, there's a moment in that story, spoilers, where she's like, all right, well, Batman's retired. We can't have a world without the Batman. So basically she decides to engineer the creation of another Batman by selecting like a kid and basically like murdering his dad and basically recreating the events that created Batman. And there's a moment where she hires Andrea Beaumont, the Phantasm, as an assassin to kill this guy. But Andrea Beaumont's like, nah, I can't kill this guy. That would be like, you know, just, you know, that would be a spit in the face of everything Batman stood for. And I can't do that if your intention is to create another Batman.
Spoilers, but that's the exact plot of Metal Gear Solid 2.
Oh, my God. But yeah, the Phantasm would come back, and I think they kind of expand a little bit. I think there was a sequel comic written, I want to say, of the Phantasm that kind of explained what happened with her after this. Like, I guess that she beats the Joker to a pulp, almost kills him, and then according to Paul Dini, there's a moment when she realizes, like, okay, the Joker is so demented and far removed from the man that he used to be when he killed my father that he's essentially not even the same guy anymore.
Oh, yeah. Did we even talk about how they have the Joker, like, pre-Joker in this, where he's just like
mob driver.
Just a low-level mob driver. And there's a great moment where he's just standing in front, in one of the flashbacks, he's standing in front of Andrea Beaumont's house, and Bruce Wayne's, like, dropping Andrea off. And he says something shitty to her, like, you know, like, oh, looking good, girl, or whatever. And, like, looks at Batman, and they just, like, stare at each other, and he flicks the cigarette at him as he drives away. And it's a great, like,
here's a question. And I know this is hard to answer since we've seen this movie before, but, like, do you think it was made really readily apparent that was the Joker? Like, if you didn't know, if you've never seen this before, and you're seeing this mob driver guy,
Occur to you that was the Joker? I haven't seen this in years, and I didn't
realize
it was literally the moment where he's like drawing the Joker face. I was like, oh shit,
very cool.
The way they had the pre-Joker gangster really reminded me of the weasel gangsters from Roger Rabbit. the way he was like leaned up against the
I'm just imagining now, like, the Phantasm in Roger Rabbit, like, hanging out at the bar.
It really reminded, just the way, because he has that like really pointy face, and just it just reminded me of that. I was just thinking of the weasel, so, like, yeah, that's him.
Okay, so this just came in from the Chadpedia type of thing, but apparently the Phantasm's, like, and I think it was maybe in early drafts of this, they were going for, there's a Batman villain called the Reaper. Have you ever seen any of this? And I guess it was appeared in a lot of, like, the Batman Year 2 comic and some of the other stuff, like, that this is heavily based off of, you know? And that character looks pretty wild and has a crazy claw hand. Can you share some of this?
Much cooler.
Right, Ryan, like, doing the investigative work, like, I gotta figure out the origin of this damn claw hand. Will not stand.
So this is the, and this looks very, like, can you see my screen?
Oh, Jesus. That looks like Todd McFarlane designed.
Yeah, it does look like out of Spawn.
The Phantasm's way cooler. I'm sorry.
This is all, look at that. Isn't that wild? And the reading the description is pretty crazy, too. It's like Jewish-German doctor.
That is a big hook on that thing.
It's basically the like a Grim Reaper's, what you call it?
A scythe.
The scythe, only without the handle. It's like he did like a one of those things you do with a shotgun when you make it like a sawed-off shotgun. This is a sawed-off...
Phantasm's cooler. And I think the Phantasm works more as, like, it does look similar. The idea of it just being like Batman, like another version of Batman. The Reaper looks a little too different from Batman for, I think, that to totally work.
Yeah.
It's got a skull head.
It's wild is that, like, the Reaper was a Jewish-German doctor who witnessed his family's death in the Holocaust. So it's like a so
fun.
Yeah, fair. But it's insane.
A barrel of laughs.
Comics.
But yeah, I'm just saying, like, it's interesting to see this is what they were kind of wanting to do and ended up sort of
Every time I see that picture of the Reaper you're showing where he's like all buff and like I'm just hearing in the back like ju-ju-ju-ju-ju-ju-ju-ju.
This is pretty cool though. Look at this cover, this Night of the Reaper.
That's cool. That's rad.
That's a little more, the one you're showing us looks a little more akin to what we see as a Phantasm. Like,
yeah,
other pictures of the Reaper, like, it's a red costume and like a skull head and stuff.
This looks cool. Like where it just it's now Ryan's showing just a picture of the Reaper where it literally is just it's the Grim Reaper that is
going
design.
After Robin and stuff.
Before we conclude, how does this movie rank for everybody in terms of like Batman movies? Because I'll say like this is my favorite Batman movie.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't sure because it's been so long since I've seen it. Going into this, I wasn't sure like where it kind of fit for me, but I can't imagine like if someone were to be like, okay, Michael, we're going to watch a Batman movie this weekend. I can't think of a movie I'd rather put on. Part of it is it's so short. I like that, but it's fun. It's snappy. It hits like everything I want a Batman movie to hit. And I think it's like that, I don't know. I feel like it's like the most successful interpretation of all the themes and characters. And no one's done it better, I think.
I'm not sure. For me, I'm not sure because this is kind of interesting. As we were watching this, like, it was going through my head, like, God, it feels like I just watched this movie. And by the end, I had a realization where I hadn't just watched this movie. It's the fact that I watched this movie so much as a kid. I just remembered everything that happened. I remember every line, every moment, every bit of animation. I'd just seen it so many times. But as far as where I would rank it, I'm not exactly sure because this is an interesting one because it's really the only one of the Bat movies to really – it has a unique structure, this flashback structure where it keeps flashing back Citizen Kane style to develop his character. And in that way, I don't want to say it hurts the movie, but as far as rewatchability, it's kind of a unique experience because it's mostly just kind of like here's a bunch of backstory for Batman. So in a way, I think that kind of hurts its rewatchability a little bit because I don't feel like it has the forward momentum that other Batman movies have, like The Dark Knight, for instance. Like The Dark Knight keeps building and building and just, again, it's not that I say it's a bad movie. It's just, I think it's sort of a different gear almost that this movie goes into as opposed to other movies. And for me, rewatchability is a big factor in how I rank a movie. And while I view this movie really in high regard, like I don't think I would put it at the top necessarily. It's towards the top, but I feel like that flashback structure while the story is good, it almost feels like kind of like
what would be at the top.
It feels like a little bit at odds with the momentum that the mob's story has. Like
what would be like you're at the top for you?
I really don't know. My first instinct is to say The Dark Knight, but I don't think that's right. Like, honestly, maybe I'll get some flack for this, but I honestly feel like Batman 89 is still really high on my list. And I think a lot of that has to do with style. Also, nostalgia is a big factor. But again, I mentioned rewatchability. That movie is so fun, and there's so many great sequences in that movie, especially at the end with the Batwing, that whole climax.
Would this be towards the bottom of all the movies or somewhere
it'd
in the
be
middle,
towards it I would say at the least I would rank this somewhere in the middle I would think
I don't know, like, I, if I was like curating like the Batman movies like top best five I'd put these in, put it in here you know like if I I would probably pick something from each kind of era like I yeah. love things about all of them I mean most of them I would yeah, say like because yeah. like I Like I rewatched.
Would you put something from the Snyder era?
Nah, I don't. Probably.
That's a no for me.
I hate to be rag on it. I mean, there's the elements I like about those movies, but I don't know if that's I wouldn't put it up there. But like, I'd put like Batman Forever up in my top five, probably. You know, like I'd probably like. Wow. Like I love Batman Forever, and it was one of my
favorite
watched
fun.
The most. And even though it's not like
brain
a great movie,
drain.
But like. Like, and it's funny too, because like, I rewatched Batman 89 a million times, but Returns wasn't one I rewatched a lot. That came out a year before this. And I rewatched it a bunch in the last like few years, and I love it. And I'd probably put that above 89. And I think like, that's a weird movie. Like,
Returns is cool.
And
it's gross.
It's so cool too. And, gross. But yeah, like, I really like Batman Begins a lot and Dark Knight. And I love. The new one's really fun too, I think. And is an interesting take and is closer probably to this, like the new one, to any of them really. Like,
yeah,
just
him walking around, the
silhouette of the Batman walking away. Like, you don't get that in any other movie, really, if you think about it. Just like the slow, Michael Myers walk.
It was interesting, like, watching this after seeing the Batman, because the Batman, I think one of the neat things about it is it's definitely drawing from everything that came before it. I think it draws a lot from this movie and this era of the Batman, for sure.
I think so, too. I need to see this movie.
Damn. Yeah, we got it on one of those hard drives that looks like a toe. Your little
you got
flash
it?
Drive. It's on.
Why
a,
did we watch this?
It's a real
Wasteland HBO.
It's a real thumb. It's a real thumb drive. Like, it's I think comes from Nick's neck of the woods.
Nick, where how is Phantasm for you? I mean, you're the big animation fan here.
It's up in the top relative to Batman animated features. Specifically,
it's not as metal as Ninja Batman.
Well, that is it's funny. I mean, it's kind of funny. That I would think I would say just ultimately that's my favorite Batman movie, just because it's just
Ninja Batman. Really,
it's so aggressively my shit. Like, it's just
it's cool. I mean, it's really
just
cool.
Not. I can't. It would be like dishonest to say that can't be my favorite, because it's just so aggressively up my alley. It has everything.
That's a fun pick for my favorite Batman.
But
Ninja
is it?
Batman.
But is it the best Batman? Batman.
No,
Ninja?
No. This is your. I was asking, like, what's your favorite?
Well,
like,
I think there's two ways to answer that question. I think favorite, like personal favorite, and then best. And I think that personal favorite, like I said, I definitely think it's Batman Ninja at this point in my life. But best, it's hard. I don't think I would say it's the absolute best, but it's definitely up there. Like,
yeah.
I would wager in top five for sure. I'm trying to think. There is another animated Batman movie that I saw some years ago that I thought was really good, and it's called Under the Red Hood. Mm-hmm. And I remember really liking that one, too. So it'd be interesting to go back and watch that.
Is that like Superman Red Dawn, where it's like...
No. It's about the kind of the Batman's origins. You have classics like, Batman 89, and I think I would argue definitely The Dark Knight and even Batman Begins. Those are all very good. There's a couple that I haven't seen, like the adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns. I never watched that.
Oh, that was good. I like that.
So it was okay.
So it's really hard for me to say. I think I would definitely need to watch a few of them back to back to do a true judgment. But I would definitely say Batman: Mask of the Phantasm is a top tier Batman film.
I would say it's the best animated Batman film for my money. But
have you seen Ninja
Batman? What about Lego Batman?
I haven't. Oh, well, that's different. That's like in a different
category.
Different.
No, it's not different.
That's a comedy.
Oh, but Ninja Batman's not different. If Ninja Batman counts, then Lego Batman has to count.
I would actually argue that Lego Batman is closer to regular Batman than Ninja Batman.
If anyone is listening and hasn't seen Ninja Batman, watch it. It's a treat.
We'll have to add that to our docket at some point in the future for Saturday Morning Apocalypse. I gotta check it out now.
My jaw was on the floor.
It's his favorite.
Well, it's definitely not going to be your favorite, but I remember when I watched Batman Ninja, my jaw was on the floor several times because
mine was too. I think I remember messaging you, Nick. Like I put it on, and I was just like, I can't believe what I'm seeing.
Like, there are just levels and levels of bonkers that just you. It's just like I didn't even. It's like that. I remember I always say this about a couple things, like that movie Dead Alive. Like, behind the scenes, Peter Jackson's like, "Let's do this," and it works and it's cool, and they just keep going crazier and crazier. This is the same thing that Batman Ninja does. That, like,
I'm glad you just cleared something up for me, Nick. I'm glad, because up to that point, until you said Batman : Ninja, I was in the impression that it was just the movie was called Ninja Batman.
No, it's Batman : Ninja.
It's more classy than Ninja Batman.
It does not have a good rating on Letterboxd, but damn, I love it. It's so cool. I think. Oh god.
Did you mention before that you really liked Return of the Joker?
Oh yeah, that's another good one. Yeah, for sure, that's another good one that I haven't seen in a while, actually. But I also really like that one.
Yeah, the Batman Beyond stuff is cool, and the cool. I'm sure watching this
and watching some Batman animated series made me want to revisit some Batman Beyond. Maybe we should do that for another one of these Saturday mornings. Get a bowl or some breakfast. You know, maybe it's like some Oreo O's, if they're not too irradiated, and watch some Batman Beyond.
I'm game.
Yeah, that one is full of dark shit too, where they had like different versions of the cut and stuff too, I think. Or stuff they played out cut on tape or DVD was different than the one on they played on TV.
But as we end, just as a quick little side note for Batman Beyond. Batman Beyond has one of my favorite Batman moments ever. Something happens in one of the episodes, beyond the intro of that show, it's amazing. Batman Beyond, one of the episodes, I can't remember exactly, something happens where someone is like messing with Bruce Wayne. They're like, he's hearing these voices and they're like messing with him. And I forget how the episode resolves, but basically Teddy McGinnis, I can't remember the character's name, who plays the new Batman in that. He basically asked Bruce, like, how did you know that the voices weren't real? And Bruce Wayne goes, because that's not what the voices in my head sound like. Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa! that's dark. And hopefully, and at some point in this
Psycho
future,
alert.
Sounds pretty twisted.
That was twisted. Some point in the future, we will talk about Batman Beyond. We will get to Batman Beyond. Especially, you know, honestly, that might be a fun thing. Once we get the Batman through the dimensional rift, that might be a fun like series of episodes to do.
I know we're wrapping up, but I have to press like an emergency pause on something that we've not mentioned that we have to at least passing mention. The end credits song on this movie. Like, so this was 1993, and like we talked about the music, but we can't leave out that the end credits song of this movie is like inexplicably like some
like a jazz,
some thing. Like love making music. Like this is like 90s like R&B, like you like got someone over, you're dimming the light. Like what the hell? I was watching this like, you know, talking about Batman Ninja jaw on the floor. My jaw was on the floor. When the like saxophone and like vocals kicked in of this like slow jam song.
You guys want to prepare to all right, Ryan, prepare to have your hat blown off. Do you know who sings the vocals for this end credit song?
I'm looking at it, but I can't place it.
Wayne's girlfriend, Cassandra, Tia Carrere.
Whoa!
Listeners, the hat is blown clean off.
I think it might. I think it might be. If I got the trivia correct, it might be her only like vocal performance for a song ever.
Wow. You got to drop some of that song in here. Like it's something else. I don't know. Like that is totally like a
like some Kenny G
studio
type thing.
Some studio. Yeah, Kenny. There's like that wail and sax. Some studio exec was like, "Let's put this in there. It's gonna be the song of the summer."
Her name was Cassandra.
It is so at odds with like what you just saw. It is the most. It's like such a bummer. Like I want the Dini cut or whatever of this movie where it's exactly the same, but the end is just like something from the score in the credits instead of this song.
Can I another trivia fact too? Maybe you're about to say this, Dave, but it says that Hans Zimmer played synthesizer on this, and
saw that in the credits. He didn't compose it, but you're just like seeing when you're watching the credits. It's like tuba or whatever, and there's like synthesist Hans Zimmer.
Oh wow!
I imagine him just like dropping in to be like, oh yeah, I'll do some like synth tracks on.
I just imagine the some executive, the movie's over and they got it all done in the can, and some executive's like, guys, this is a movie. We gotta have a sexy end credits song.
Yeah, for the Oscars when they get the best original song. Tia Carrere can perform this.
Damn, that's a perfect world you're explaining there.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Saturday Morning Apocalypse. I had a good time going down memory lane. As you mentioned, Mike, this to me, too, this is a movie where I just basically wore out the clamshell. Watched this a million times. This is one of those movies that just is burned into my memory. I remember everything about it. I could recite, like, if you hooked up a little R2-D2 core to my brain, I could like project this movie just based on memory alone. So. But that's going to do it for this episode of Saturday Morning Apocalypse, folks. We'll be back next time. Same bat time. Same bat channel.
That's the dance from Batman Beyond.